Welcome to the Bilauer B-Side. I'm your host, Mike Ahn. On these B-Sides, we invite students to continue the conversation from the previous podcast. In this episode, we got Dr. Todd Pickett and Landon White sitting down with Nadia Lauren to continue the conversation on whether evangelical is the right term in our Western context. They have a lot of great things to say. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, welcome to the Biola Hour B-Side podcast. I'm your host this week, Landon White, standing in for Mike Ahn. And I've got a couple of friends here from Biola University, and we're going to reflect on Dr. Alan Yeh's thoughts on Western evangelicalism and global Christianity. So if we could just all go around, say our names, what we do here at Biola, and give me one thought or memory or connection to Billy Graham.
To Billy Graham. And that's because Dr. Alan Yeh said that evangelicalism was kind of embodied in Billy Graham to some degree.
The definition of evangelical is like Billy Graham.
So my name is Todd Pickett. I am the Dean of Spiritual Development at Biola University. One connection to Billy Graham. Well, I had no... Here's the thing. I took a tour of the Los Angeles Coliseum a couple of years ago where football is played and concerts are held. But when you walk in those arches in the front, if you can picture the Coliseum, it has a big torch. On the insides of the arches, they have kind of plaques of major events in the history of the Los Angeles Coliseum. And the largest crowd ever to attend an event at the Los Angeles Coliseum was a Billy Graham crusade.
Whoa.
That is still more than a concert, more than even the Pope spoke there, but more than any event, Billy Graham's crusade. And I don't know what year that was. It was a while ago, but
yeah.
But yeah, that brought him to mind, and it's cool that the Coliseum has a plaque commemorating that day.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm Nadia Loren, and I'm a senior intercultural studies major at Biola. One connection is that I worked at Forest Home Christian Camps in California, and Billy Graham actually had a huge doubt moment in the early years of his ministry, and so he was invited up to Forest Home for like a few days or something. I'm not exactly sure how long, but for a retreat time, and he apparently overcame his doubts with the Lord during that time. So every year they always talk about that at Forest Home. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. Landon White, I am the worship coordinator with chapel bands here at Biola University. And I was part of a youth choir in junior high and high school at my church that would do like a choir tour every year, and we sang for, I don't think it was an official Billy Graham crusade, it was like some sort of thing with his name on it, and so.
All right.
Yeah, that was the thing we did.
What, do you remember what song you sang?
No.
Okay. All right.
Actually,
then you probably don't remember what key it was in either.
Right, no. Right, okay. I was like.
Because it could have been in the key 13. Of B. For Billy.
Oh, or G.
For Graham.
Or Graham. Maybe there's a key change.
Yeah, in the middle. There's a key change.
Hey, so I'm going to start out just reflection on what Dr. Yeh shared with us earlier. What's something that stood out from any of that for either of you?
I think the occasion in some ways for this invitation to Dr. Yeh was this book that had come out. Has just recently come out in January, still evangelical, and it was a collection of essays by different people who still identify as evangelicals, and Dr. Yeh wrote a chapter in the book, so it was good to have him speak, and it's good to ask the question, especially, you know, I think what stands out to me about the whole thing is that, you know, it's been often observed lately that evangelical has become a political designation. Mm. Through the election recently and since the election, that if it ever was a kind of, and I think it was a predominantly kind of religious designation, it has been, has all this political freight now and probably a stereotype associated with it. So it was really good to hear Dr. Ye kind of return us to kind of the religious, biblical, spiritual foundations. Because, yeah, these days it's easy to begin thinking of it as certain political positions currently. So I think two of the things that stood out for me was he says it's a biblical movement. Yeah, it's not a denomination, right? It's a movement, because you can be Lutheran evangelical or even Catholic evangelical, right? So it's both biblical. He's a biblicist. You know, it strongly locates itself in the authority of Scripture, and I like that. And on the other hand, I like that it was. He said the other one, a second among the four marks was its activist. So you have both the people of the book, but a people who are doers.
Yeah, that stood out to me because at least where I grew up, activism wasn't emphasized as much, and I was part of a tradition that was distinctly.
You mean you're inside watching TV a lot? Yes. You don't mean you weren't active. You mean you're
right. We were passive. We just consumed
couch potatoes.
Yeah.
The fifth one being couch potatoes. Activism.
Right.
So, yeah. Biblical. Yeah.
Yeah. So hearing that part of the definition was surprising for me.
Yeah, I think something that he really emphasized too was social justice comes before evangelism in the, order of the way that things go. And I just think to myself, like, if someone is starving, you probably should feed them first right. before you evangelize.
Give them the four spiritual laws.
Right. I think that people's holistic well-being is really important, and so I really appreciated how he really emphasized that, because I don't think that that's something that you hear a lot. You do hear, I especially hear this in intercultural studies of, do you evangelize first and then do social justice? Do you do social justice first and then evangelize? But I really appreciated that he really, really emphasized, like, no. You need to take care of the person first before you can show them who can ultimately take care of them.
Yeah. That in the tradition I grew up, it was a lot more emphasis on sharing Jesus. Like, podcast listeners didn't see me do air quotes, but sharing Jesus, meaning like to give people theology or give people ideas about Jesus. Todd, I'm interested for you. Did you grow up in an evangelical tradition, and what did that look like? Did you see any activism emphasized there?
You know, of course, my early years were as part of a youth group.
Okay.
You know, an evangelical church. So it was a youth group culture for me in those early years. And so I think youth groups, youth groups are a lot about fun. So I don't know if we emphasize either evangelism or social justice.
That was the active part, the fun.
I think we thought one of the five tenets of evangelicalism was having fun and dating. And that's, I think that was the – or marriage was one of the five, you know, or something, you know. I don't think, is all those early days. I would say one of his, four is conversionism. You know, that evangelicals believe there's a moment, there needs to be a moment when you are born again, or it doesn't have to be a moment, but there has to be this acknowledgement that, yeah, you've made a turn, you've given your life to the Lord. And in a period of your life, you can identify, if not a moment. And I think that was kind of a major... That was emphasized. In fact, we used to go to this, this podcast is coming to you from Southern California, and down the road is the city of Santa Ana, where there was the first Calvary Chapel.
On
Saturday nights, the big thing in youth culture was to go to Calvary Chapel, because they'd have this big concert. And this is like in the first days of Christian contemporary music. The very first kind of pioneers, Randy Stonehill, Mustard Seed Faith, and Daniel Amos. And,
we have no idea. Who those people are.
I'm just going to keep naming them to your hero. Keith Green, Acts chapter 2.
Keith Green, okay. I know him. Yes.
And, there would be hundreds of students who would pour into Calvary Chapel on a Saturday night, and you'd bring your non-Christian friends, because there'd be a concert, then there'd be a talk by Chuck Smith, and then there'd be the altar call.
Yes.
And, I'm telling you, people would pour down there in front.
Yeah.
And so, I think that for me was like, so I guess you call that evangelism. It wasn't necessarily me doing it. Right. my job was to bring a friend and say, hey, there's a cool concert. And, oh, yeah, this guy talks.
I suppose
evangelism. Yeah, social justice, not so much. Nope.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the conversionism part is a thing I wonder, at least amongst my peers, is a harder thing to resonate with, I think. I don't know if this is true for current college students, but people in their late 20s, early 30s that I'm friends with, I think the idea of just praying a prayer and just accepting Jesus into our heart, like that's what we hear when we hear conversionism. So that's like an extreme example of it. And so I think people don't resonate as much with that side of evangelicalism, mm-hmm. at least in my demographic, possibly.
Yeah, we were talking beforehand about what kind of activism these days among evangelicals is, what the word would be, kind of appropriate, and which is going to, and so, Nadia, you had some thoughts about how you felt that, yeah, it is a tenet of evangelicalism, but is it really
acceptable?
Yeah, tell us more about what you're feeling there.
So I feel like if you say the word social justice in an evangelical community, it's often like either like crickets, like people don't know how to respond, or outrage. Or in certain places, obviously, support. But I think it's often having like a negative connotation. Mm. Like that is not for Christians to do. And I see a lot of my non-Christian friends doing a lot of social justice and a lot of caring for the poor and the marginalized. And I just think to myself, wow, how much more powerful would it be if there was an actual reason to be doing that? Because if we think about just doing social justice, in my opinion, with no lasting hope or a real reason why you're doing it, it's just to be a good person and mm-hmm. maybe help people. But if you're doing it because you love God and because you love people and you want for people to understand the hope that is in Christ, I think that is such like a more powerful and moving thing. Rather than just doing it just because. So I just always think to myself, how much more could be done if Christians actually got on board with social justice to actually make a lasting change? I think that there is certain social justice that could be looked down upon because people do not believe that it is Christian-like, I suppose. Anything that has to do with race seems to be not Christian activism
mm-hmm.
Because we're all one in Christ or something of the sort. Mm-hmm. I think that, in my opinion, rather than allowing for activism and social justice to go to people who are not Christian, I think that the church really should be stepping up to do a lot of the activism simply because of, Dr. Yeh said this also, of really loving God and loving neighbor, and that those are our commands, and to love God with everything in us. And so because we love God with everything in us, how do we treat the people around us and how do we care for them?
Yeah, he talked about when he was asked about the, because the Reformation was a topic
mm-hmm.
In the talk, in the interview, because birthday, anniversary lately, and Yeh made the point that Reformation is really a kind of a return to, in a sense, a kind of origins, you know, roots.
Mm-hmm.
It's a purifying return.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said was, yeah, we've... one of the things he would hope for is that there be a return to the great commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, heart, and strength, and love your neighbors yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would really love for social justice and activism to be redeemed to evangelicalism.
Yeah. Hearing that makes me think of like a little bit of our fear of association. Like, mm-hmm. I wonder if that's some of that for people is like, oh, if I'm into social justice, then that's going to associate me with these other people or this other movement or this other thing. In a similar way that people might say, I don't want to call myself an evangelical, even though like they would probably ascribe to the majority mm-hmm. of the tenets of evangelicalism, but they don't want to be associated with somebody that votes a certain way because it's politicized.
Yeah, I think, I'll be honest, I think that's probably one of the most frustrating things when I'm talking to people almost on any topic is the, you know, you're taught in a critical thinking course of the various kinds of fallacies.
Yes.
Yeah. And one is guilt by association.
Right.
When someone, you know, it's a fallacy to argue against someone when you're not arguing actually against their position, but, you know, what that position or who that position might be associated with.
Yes.
Parts of it. Yes. That's considered to be a critical thinking fallacy.
Right.
Kind of like out of bounds. That's unfair. You have to argue what the person's talking about, not how you can imagine it could be related to something else.
Yes.
Or a slippery slope. Well, it could slide into that. Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about this.
Right.
And so I think, you know, I think that happens with discussions of social justice. I think people say, well, you know, if you do that, these other people also do that. But here's some of the errors that they make, or here's some of the roots of that movement, and it's not Christian roots. I mean, I know I was talking to someone who was up, who was in the LA Women's March recently. And of course, there are all kinds of, you know, stuff happening down there, people marching for all kinds of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But this person was a Christian and they felt like, you know, well, there's some things that I have that are in common cause with people who might be otherwise very different from me.
Right.
But she was, you know, got some pushback from some people because she was on the same street, in the same parade, on the same march with people who might believe things very differently. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think the guilt by association is a real obstacle.
Yeah.
When it comes to some of this stuff.
Yeah. Because I even think about the term Christian. Some people like are a little bit scared of that because that, like, if that associates me with like abuses or different like politicized movements throughout history that have like done harm to people in different ways. It's like, well, the Christians did this. I'm like, none of us want that said about us. But it's like, well, I'm not that. I didn't, you know, I'm not doing that type of thing. So I think it's, I should have the same standard in reverse as well. Like if I don't want people judging me that way, like, oh, you're part of these people, I shouldn't be judging. Like if you say I'm for activism, that for me to immediately put you in the category with all these other people, that's not fair either.
Mm. Yeah. I think another term, so just to review, you know, Dr. Alan Yeh talked about these four kind of pillars of evangelicalism properly understood, originally outlined by David Bevington. One was that we're biblicists. We've talked about conversionists, we're activists. And then the fourth we haven't mentioned, he talked about crucicentric, which is the cross being the center of history. What do you guys, how do you connect with that? In what ways is that? That's a good, solid point about evangelicalism. And is it misunderstood?
Right. Yeah, I'd be really curious to know where it came out of, where that, like, because, you know, he even said, like, a lot of theology comes out of reaction to heresy.
Right.
And so, like, I wonder, like, at the time that some of these were being defined, where that came, because I don't know if, for me, it feels narrow, because I want to emphasize both the cross and the resurrection, as well as the life of Jesus. And could even just this emphasis on the cross take away from emphases on God the Father or God the Holy Spirit? And so I don't want to be so reactionary and be like, oh, that's not enough. That's too narrow of a thing. So I'm just curious as to how that became an emphasis specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually like the cross-centeredness, of course, because it is so, I think it represents so much of course, not only of atonement.
Right.
Forgiveness, so many of the realities of our need. But also, it also presents this other way Christians should go about securing themselves in the world, right? The cross is foolishness, says Paul, in part because why would anybody be that vulnerable? Or that's shameful to be that vulnerable. And why would anybody want to model such vulnerability?
Yeah.
Power is the way to go. So in some sense, it totally makes sense. This is a whole nother way of doing life than what would come to somebody intuitively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been struck that my friends who are Orthodox Christians, with a capital O, resurrection, Easter Day, that's the high point of the Christian year. And I think that can probably be, you know, implied in the Christocentric view, obviously the cross and the resurrection. But yeah, that's always struck me, that probably Christmas is the incarnation is a bigger deal for when I grew up than
right.
than Easter Day. And although Easter Day was bigger than Good Friday, I suppose. But I still like the Christocentric view. Nadia, I want to ask you, if you think your friends, you know, your peers here at school or other Christians you know, if somebody kind of pressed them and said, you know, well, you say you're a Christian, but what kind of Christian are you? How likely are they to use the word, oh, I'm an evangelical Christian? Or do you think they'd say something else? And what might they say, and why might they say that instead?
I actually feel like most people my age are maybe more so non-denominational. I personally didn't even really know what it meant to be evangelical until I came to Biola. And so I think for a lot of people, they either grew up in a very specific denomination, and so they would say that, or there's a lot of churches that are non-denominational. So I remember filling out like my application for Biola, and I think I had to put my denomination, and I just put non-denominational.
I'm a non.
Yeah, and so I think that a majority of people my age would probably say that.
Is it just because they wouldn't know the word evangelical? Or yeah, they know it, but they still would rather not say that.
I think it depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are definitely people who really don't want to say that they're evangelical, and they are just followers of Christ.
Mm. Yeah, that's a popular term.
But I think there are also, I was just talking to my friend today about this chapel, and he told me, like, I actually don't even really know what that term means. I hear it all the time. I know it's a way of defining a Christian, but I don't really know what it means. So I think there's a lot of, like, ambiguity in it where we kind of think we know what it means, but it could be very, very stereotyped. To where people are just kind of like, I'd rather not try to figure it out.
Yeah. You don't jump in and say, well, it's the Bebington Quadrilateral.
Now I will.
Right. Pull out your chart.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
What about for your age group?
Well, I was and we won't say what my age group is. My 35-year-old age group. They're laughing. You know, it's interesting to me what you say about the non-denominational, because I think you're right. That's very common. I think a lot of Christians my age would answer the same way. So non-denominational has a nice ring to it in the sense that it almost says, the word almost means we don't make distinctions. Right. At our church. Yeah. You know, we're inclusive, you know, we're non-denominational, you know.
Right.
It's like saying non-partisan, you know, it has that nice kind of
yes.
we're open, you know, kind of ring yeah. to it. And so I think that is kind of maybe a default. It might be the only word people know on the one hand. On the other hand, it has that nice kind of ring to it, as we're not an exclusive bunch, you know. We're I agree. I think evangelical is, especially now, kind of a ambiguous term. People feel ambivalent about it. They, you know, they hear it and it has baggage now. And I like what Dr. Ye said. He says, let's, you know, freely when that happens to a word, you know, when a word kind of gets eroded by use and comes to mean something else in the popular imagination, people find another word.
Sure, yeah.
And I like what Dr. Ye says. He says, you know, let's not do that quite yet.
Right, yeah.
Let's try and clarify. And do you think, Nadia, do you think if people, if, you know, after you've said, oh, the baby didn't quadruple, do you think if you said, you know, actually evangelicals are biblical, we are, the cross is central, activism is central, and a commitment to Christ kind of conversion is, do you think most of them would go, well, yeah, I like that?
I think people would say, yeah, I like that. I think it would be a good way to weed out people who are not actually evangelical. Because it's almost like cultural now. As an American, I'm an evangelical Christian. But I don't think people actually know what that really means. Because I think there are some things in the quadrilateral that are just kind of like tossed to the side a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if we're actually looking at the quadrilateral, you kind of have to have all four to be considered evangelical. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not having all four, I don't know if you could consider yourself evangelical.
That's a great point, actually.
Yeah, I wonder how much is just inherited. Like there's nominal evangelicalism. Mm. People that just associate with that based on their culture. I mean, coming from the South, that's very true. In the Bible Belt, people would just say, I'm an evangelical Christian or I'm a born again Christian. But so in that case where that term is used, born again, would definitely have to do with conversionism, but they might not be big on biblicism or activism necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so it is just kind of a inherited thing rather than by the book, by the definition, I am this thing.
Yeah. You know, it'd be interesting to, a long time ago, I read a book by a guy who, one of his arguments was, you know, I think it was at a time when Christians were encouraged to be very outspoken, and maybe that's still the case, but to let people know that they're Christians.
Yeah.
In a new setting, kind of, hey, well, I'm Christian, and blah, blah, blah. And he was arguing that, actually, no, you shouldn't tell anyone you're a Christian. Don't tell anyone.
You know, just like Jesus,
keep it
right?
A secret, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to do this tell miracle. No, don't tell anybody. Okay. It's like, what? Yeah. This is a miracle. Right. But his argument was there was such a misunderstanding, and probably still is, of what a Christian is, that if you tell the person first that you're a Christian, their stereotype will kind of overwhelm how they experience you. They'll just be thinking differently.
Yeah, they'll put you in the category, and then the work is to separate yourself from the category.
And this person will say, why don't you live life in front of them for a while?
Yeah.
And then it usually will leak out at some point that you're a Christian. And then you want that surprise. Hopefully they've seen some good things. And if they had a negative view of evangelical Christians, if it leaks out that you're an evangelical at some point, which it should, they would be like, oh, it kind of redefines them. I didn't realize that evangelical Christians were like you. So some of us have the experience of being around people who say, I don't like Christians, and they turn to us and they go, we don't mean you. We like you. You're the good kind of Christian. But that's kind of what you want them to say. It's like, oh, we have this stuff in a Christian, but yeah, you break the mold if it's a negative stereotype. So the whole idea of labeling and what you call yourself in front of other people, there's this other approach, which, you know, don't be in such a hurry if you're going to be in front of them for a while.
Right.
To kind of label yourself. And you know, hopefully you're not doing it because you're ashamed, but it's almost a little kind of like, oh, I wonder what happened if they just watched me.
Yeah.
And then it leaked out later that I went to this church and believed these things.
Would I look any different?
And would it kind of break their, would you hear a little cracking sound in their head? stereotype
kind of their categories blowing up.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for today. Thank you, Todd and Nadia, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and we dedicate this podcast to Billy Graham.
Yeah.
Because he passed away recently, if you're listening to the launch of this particular episode. And a huge loss, of course, but 99 years is a great legacy. Yeah.
And, huge impact on the country and the world.
Yeah, so I mean, It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Thankful for him.
Indeed. Well, thank you, listeners out there. Grace and peace to you all.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, we would love it if you were to rate us on iTunes. And if you want to continue the conversation, follow us on social media.